Yo, what is up, guys? Welcome to this episode of the Ace of Spades podcast, hosted by your boy right here, Anthony Spade. On today's episode, I am joined by my homie, Leah Nelson. Man, what a conversation we had on this one. We discuss dealing with past traumas, we also deal with stress, because Leah actually has her own ebook on stress, which you can get at atomictrain.com. What a phenomenal book that is, about learning to discern what stress truly is for the person. And we discuss how trauma actually leads to that, and how things in your past life affect your hormones, your physicality, your psychology, your physiology now. So we dive right into that. So other than that, as you guys know, the podcast is teamed up with Morphogen Nutrition to offer you guys the best supplements in the game. You guys can use code SPADA for 10% off all supplements at morphogennutrition.com. And Symbiote Strength is open for coaching clients. If you're interested in becoming a monster in and out of the gym, well, go sign up. Link is down below. Or you can go over to my Instagram at Spada Fitness, and the link is in my bio for the initial questionnaire. So let's not waste any time. Let's get to the episode. Let's welcome on Leah Nelson.
Have you listened to my podcast?
You know, actually not recently.
Wow. That's staying in. I'm making that a sound bite. I'm making that a sound bite.
I haven't even listened to Mark's podcast for like a month. I haven't been listening to podcasts.
I haven't really. I listened to ones I can get done in like 30 minutes.
Yeah. My auditory attention has been like this big lately. Yep. And I just can't, like, I'll turn it on and then it will be over. And I'm like, I don't even know what that was about. Like, I literally don't remember a single thing from that. I was not listening at all.
My ADHD has been off the charts recently, which is why I've gotten into just like, I have like my whole pack of toothpicks, and I'll go through like three of these a day, and I'll like chew them like throughout the day. I'm like, this is probably bad for my teeth, but I was like, I really need this, so I'm not picking my nails. Who needs teeth? I look good without them. Right? I don't know if I'd be able to talk fairly well. Maybe then I can get fake teeth and look really, really nice.
Yes, definitely.
We're gonna have to worry about those things.
You could also get like a fake grill. It'd be good. It'd be good for you.
I'm not cool enough for a grill. I'd have to get what are they called? Veneers?
Yes.
I love how people get veneers and they're supposed to be like, they look like real teeth, but then they end up kind of like bigger. So it looks kind of like, it looks really off.
It looks, you can still, you're like,
You can tell those ain't your teeth, buddy.
Yep.
But I mean, you have a great smile. Great smile goes a long way. I don't got one of those.
No, you don't. It's an awful smile. You should scowl a lot more.
So makes the beard and everything look a lot tougher.
Yeah, definitely.
I just need this to like grow like this way. And if it could, that'd be. I've been trying to grow this for like a.
Why do you want it to grow out?
This has been growing for like a month.
Really?
No. Well. Yeah, like a month.
I mean.
No, actually, over a month, because I got it done. Because I shaved it just slightly before I got my haircut last time. So this is the product of a month.
That's not too bad. At least it's all like smooth and like well dispersed. Like you're not.
Well, yeah, because I got beard oil now. So now I'm actually, so like I said, I'm now actually taking care of myself. I'm taking care of how I look rather than just being a fucking hermit and just realizing that I'm full on straight on bodybuilder and I don't have to go to work. And plus I don't have to like show my face, but now I got to show my face because I do video check-ins. So now I got to look good. But now I can expend. I love them because now I can expense my haircuts.
You're like, this is a write-off.
And my haircuts are quite expensive down here. So it's great. No, I actually love them. I think they're great. Really? I've had tremendous feedback about seeing my, because the one thing I like, and I think I went over this on the podcast with Dylan. So if people want to go back and listen to it also, you can re-listen to me if you heard this before, you know, fuck off. But I think it's pretty cool for them to see what you're seeing. So you can go through their whole check-in and kind of see what patterns you're seeing and seeing why we're seeing these patterns, and you can connect dots throughout it. Now, I have a problem with being very lengthy with my check-ins. So I'm trying to nail them down to get them under 10 minutes of video.
Oh, but God. Some 10 minutes?
Yeah, sorry. That's I don't got a lot of clients. I can do 10 minutes.
You know, honestly, and all due respect. Well, I mean, no. If Mark sent me a 10-minute voice memo.
Oh, I'm in trouble.
I would die. I'd be like, because I already listened to his voice memos at 1.5 times speed. I have to listen to everything faster because I'm like, people don't fucking talk fast enough. Like, there are some people, I have some athletes who will send me voice memos and I turn theirs to 2x speed because, and then I'll listen to it like accidentally at 1x speed. And it is like they're talking like this. And I'm like, I need the information faster than that.
How long are your check-ins? Because mine are like 50 seconds long from Mark. If mine are like, if I listen to half speed, I'd be done like this.
His voice memos last typically anywhere between 26 seconds and a minute and a half, depending on what's going on and what he has to tell me. And I listen to them at 1.5 times speed.
I'm just like, Mark, you should just write out what you're going to say. Just write out like, hey, we're good.
That would take him too long because he's got fat thumbs and he doesn't know how to type.
He uses a computer. He uses a desktop.
I know. He doesn't know how to type. He can't type.
You can't have that fat fit, Mark. We're going to get you a keyboard that has those really big keys.
Texting doesn't work because he has fat
thumbs. Oh, texting definitely doesn't work.
Typing doesn't work because he can't type fast.
So this is how we're starting the podcast. We're just shitting on our coach.
Mark, I love you.
We could do this, though, because I feel like we've been with him for so long. I feel like I can kind of play with him and he'll be fine.
My two-year Markiversary is coming up.
Like the one time he shouts me out on his podcast, it's like saying great things. And the one time I shout him out, it's like, oh, you're shitting me. Nice.
Mark, learn how to fucking type.
Just type it out saying we're good. No, usually they're like a minute. Usually they're like 50 seconds.
Yeah.
But that's all you need. But that's all we also need.
Exactly. That's all we need. Like, I don't need more than that. Unless I have like a direct question or something is going on. And then he'll like take the time to explain like, hey, this is what I think it is. This is what we're going to do. And I'm like, okay, cool.
But so my check-ins are oftentimes like 8 to 10 minutes for each client.
So mine for the most part are a minute and a half to 2 minutes. And then maybe 30%, I'll go to 4 minutes. And then if there's something significant, like if we just got blood work back and there's shit on there, or we got a GI map back, there's shit on there. Then I think the longest voice memo I've ever sent was 11 minutes.
I guess doing video, I just end up, if I do blood work reviews in itself are like 15 minute videos.
The thing is I don't go through and explain everything to them.
See, I go through the first time.
So this is what our problem is. This is how it's affecting this other thing. And this is what we're going to do about it. It's all updated. Go check it out. Let me know if you have questions. Like in those situations, it's 2 to 4 minutes usually.
Depends how many things I see wrong or bad. Yeah. I've seen some bad blood work where it does take me a while to actually do it. But typically I know what it is within. I don't even need to scan any. Like I don't even need to like really even like look at any charts or anything anymore. Like,
I know, isn't that nice?
I used to have to look at charts and now I can just scan it one time and I could kind of already make my, like I could scan it and maybe within 5 minutes I'll know what is the issue.
There's a couple markers in the CBC panel that if it's off, I'll still reference it just to make sure that I'm right in what I'm thinking based on the other markers.
Yeah.
Because I want to be sure, I'll still reference it. But for the most part, like I've gotten to that same point and it feels really fucking good to like actually know that you know it and just be able to look at it and be like, oh, cool. That's what we're looking at. That's what we're going to do. Like, that's nice.
Well, let's go back to how you even got into coaching in the first place. I already did the intro. So I did the intro everywhere. So you guys know who this is. This is Leah. She's one of my good friends. Yada, yada, yada. She's a coach with Tomanek Trained. She's been there for a while. I don't know how long it's been. It's been like almost 2 years, I think, at this point.
About a year and a half, I think. Yeah,
year and a half. Maybe. Yeah, I can't count time.
Yeah.
It's been too far. It's been too long. But yeah, no, she's a good coach, guys. Yeah. So intro yourself, who you are.
I'm a good coach. I'm Leah. I'm a good coach. I'm okay. I'm fair. I'm fine. I'm good. I'm getting better every day. That's what it's about. But yeah, no, getting into coaching. So I got into the fitness industry as a personal trainer in 2015. And I worked as a personal trainer for a couple years at a gym out in Seattle and ended up leaving that job for various reasons. A lot of them were just personal. Like I really needed to work on myself. I was young. I was like 19, 20. And there was just, I was going through a lot of shit. And so I left that job so I could actually focus on myself and figuring out who the fuck I was and how to do this. And I was out of the industry for a little while, kind of dabbled here and there, had some like freelance clients over the years. And then I got back into personal training and gym management in 2019, and managed a club out in Monroe, which is about 45 minutes northwest of Seattle. And did that for a while, turned the facility around, had a pretty good time, but ended up leaving that job as well because there were a lot of the same issues that I was running into just overall in the fitness industry, things that really frustrated me. You know, no disrespect against personal trainers, but personal trainers are extremely undereducated. And I was running into a massive amount of clients who had these larger issues that I had absolutely no idea how to address, how to fix. You know, I had clients that were coming to me with Hashimoto's, with Graves, with estrogen dominance, like with all of these different issues, clients that had been yo-yo dieting for years, women that were eating, you know, 700 to 900 calories a day and had been doing that for a decade. And I knew that there was a way to fix it and I didn't know how, and nothing in my environment in a gym facility was ever going to teach me how to do it. And so I started realizing that there were all of these gaps in personal training. And beyond that, really just starting to be very, very discouraged about the general culture of the personal trainer to client relationship, in that when you sign someone up for personal training, even if, you know, you're trying to handle their nutrition and you give them like general macros to hit, what pretty much happened across the board was your client would come in and they would train with you for, you know, 30 or 60 minutes. And they'd do that two or three times a week and then they would be done. And that was it. Like showing up to that personal training session and checking the box if I worked out with my trainer, just like, that was it. That was all they did. And so they weren't actually making any progress because I couldn't actually fully impact their lives the way that I wanted to. Because like as personal trainer, when you're working with back-to-back clients for 12 hours a day, like you really only have that 30 or 60 minutes with them and then they're gone and you have no idea what they're doing. And there's no way to really keep track of that. At least not in any of the facilities that I've worked in. So I got really, really frustrated with all of those things and decided after a lot of thought that I was going to strike out and be an online coach because I knew that it was a profession that was growing. And if I wanted to get in, I needed to get in sooner than later. And so I did. I had one online client. I left my job that paid $65,000 to $70,000 a year to go all in on that one client. and I stuck with it and it turned into something really, really fucking cool. I was able to connect with so many more people, find incredible mentors, learned a shit ton. Like the amount that my education has grown over the last 3 years, like actually boggles me. I had a really cool moment the other day. I got a series of blood work and, a GI map back from an athlete and I reviewed all of it. And like, she had told me all of her symptoms and like everything that was going on. And I realized as I was building her plan that 3 years ago, I would have absolutely no idea what to do with that person. And like, I would give it my best. I would do everything I could for them, but I would not be able to make any kind of significant difference in the quality of their life whatsoever. And as I was sitting there programming for them, I was like, shit, not only do I know what I'm doing, but like, I can actually help this person. And I've learned how to do that in the last 3 years by actually taking a chance on myself and going all in on one client and leaving my job and burning the ships. And it actually put me in a position of having to work that much harder to be successful so that I could positively impact people and be the change in the industry that I want to be.
Isn't that kind of crazy? Because I mean, I even think about that same thing. Like I was on a podcast It actually released last week. This is recorded a week in advance. But I recorded a podcast for Every Calorie Counts, and they kind of asked about this, and the whole podcast was about my journey through it. And I'm like, like a year and a half ago, would never know how to do any of this stuff. I was like, what I did in 2021 as a coach kind of just boggles my mind in terms of what I've done. I'm like, man, I would have never knew how to actually help a female come off hormonal birth control correctly or anything. And now it's just like, now that's like, oh, I know exactly what to do. It's like, if you want to come off, it's like, I know exactly the plan before, when it happens, and what's going to happen after. And it's like, and that's a pretty cool moment to have when you think about it. You're like, oh, me a year ago, like that's how much you trained, right? Now, did you take anything away from the PT stuff that you at least bring to what you do now?
So much on training. So much on like the actual act of training. That I have had a lot of people over the last couple years like ask me what they should do if they want to be an online coach. And my answer is always the same. For as shitty as it is, spend at least a year being an in-person personal trainer. Like,
Don't do what I did.
Don't do what you did. Go go into a facility and actually learn. Start building up your base of cues and how to manipulate people's bodies and working with people with like varying limb lengths and ratios so that you can start understanding not only what exercises to apply to those physiologies, but also how different the same movement will look in one body as compared to the other, but still be correct just because of those physiological differences. That makes a huge difference. Not to mention, you know, you really have to develop a very specific type of personality as a personal trainer in order to affect change in your clients. And that rolls over really well into being a coach. But then in addition to that, you know, when you're in these in-person facilities, find the people that are way better than you. I was privileged to work with a couple different CSCSs, strength and conditioning coaches, who taught me a shitload about strength and conditioning practice, like what they actually do, how they program for different athletes from different sports. And you start to learn that there are a lot of different ways to skin a cat. And if you're working only with bodybuilders, then I can see how that might not necessarily be, you know, desirable for you. But the fact of the matter is no one just wakes up and decides to be an online coach and then their entire roster is filled with bodybuilding athletes. Yeah. Like, that's not going to happen. The majority of your clientele are going to be lifestyle athletes. And it's really beneficial to start understanding how these different theories and thought processes can apply and benefit people from different backgrounds.
Yeah. Well, I think that's why we have an N of one approach type thing. Because everybody moves different, everyone acts different, everyone perceives stress different, everyone kind of, they're all different. So how
we're
you
all special things? Snowflakes.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, we're all special snowflakes.
So really, none of us are special. You're so ordinary.
Yeah, not special at all. Now the one big thing that you've been really open about through your, it's taken a lot of work, and I think that's what we're going to dive into. Is your past traumas. I know you talked about it on Mark's podcast and things like that. So dealing with, I think this is a big thing that's actually a missing component within coaching, is getting to know someone's background, like all the way back around, right? Like all the way going back to like childhood. I find a lot of these things, the reason why I wanted to have you on is because I keep seeing these things pop up, and the more people I see, and you're definitely going to go into better ways of working through this stuff and things like that. But the more people I see, I direct them more to therapists than I do to like to work through this shit. Because it ends up like harming them more so in what they're trying to do and their goal. So I wanted to talk about how you dealt with your past traumas and how you found more of a way to actually face it rather than run from it. Because so many people are trying to run from these things rather than actually address it.
Well, first, I ran from mine for a really long time. Yeah. I ran so hard and so fast and so far from mine that they just kept slingshotting and hitting me in the ass every time and knocking me over. I spent a lot of years just trying to ignore the fact that they ever happened and not actually confronting them and dealing with them. And that's honestly where the majority of the like if we're looking at the really bad shit that happened, that has happened in my life, it all came from me not actually addressing these traumas and recognizing the events as even being traumatic. There's stuff that happened like in my early and middle childhood that it wasn't until I was like 24, 25, even was able to look at and be like, yeah, no, that was actually a very, very significant trauma. But because of how I was raised, because of the environment that I was in, and just because of who I am as the person, I just minimized it and was like, oh yeah, no, that's not a big thing at all. It's not affecting me. I'm fine. When the complete opposite was true. In terms of actually like addressing my trauma and navigating it, I tried a lot of different things for a long time. I have been to a lot of different therapists. And like you, for the most part, with pretty much all of my athletes, I recommend the same thing. Like if we're struggling with things, my first recommendation is, hey, you should probably go talk to someone. That might be a really helpful thing for you to do, is like go speak to a qualified professional. They're there for a reason. Like it shouldn't be a shameful thing. This needs to be normalized. And like needing to go speak with a therapist is actually a good thing, especially if you can get yourself there to that appointment. That's a really good thing. But for myself personally, it did not help at all, like even a little bit. My first introduction to therapy was when I was 15. My parents were going through a divorce. I was going through like a super rebellion teenager phase, and they had no idea what to do with me. I'm the youngest of six kids, and my parents will tell you I was the only teenager that they had, and they had no idea what to do with me. And they were dealing with so much trauma of their own that like there just wasn't a space for that. So I saw three therapists when I was 15. The first one, if I remember correctly, basically told my parents that I was too much of a handful and they couldn't help me. The second one, none of us liked at all. And it was like a kind of skeezy person. And the third one, she was actually pretty helpful. In the sense that she actually was the first person to create a safe space for me. And I didn't feel like anything I told her was going to be told to my parents and then used against me. So that was really helpful. But she didn't actually help me deal with any of my shit. And then between 15 and about 23, I saw 12 more therapists that I literally like went out. I was like, therapy is a thing. I'm pretty sure I need therapy. But like, I could not find anyone that would actually help me. I would go to a therapist. I would tell them all of my trauma and rehash the same story over and over again. And they would tell me things that I had figured out for myself like 2 years before. Like there was no growth, no momentum there. And so what I started to do instead was literally putting myself in positions to where a lot of my traumas would be triggered again and essentially desensitizing myself to them. I don't recommend this for most people. I don't really recommend this for anybody. It was in all reality a really, really stupid thing for me to do. And a lot of those instances actually created more trauma that then needed to be addressed. But through that, I was able to understand a lot more about my own resilience. And what started happening over years of time was being able to see these little common threads that were strung throughout my entire life. And I'm talking like from 3 years old to 25, there's this common theme, this thread of behavior, and recognizing that it was my own behavior. It was my own thought processes. It was the stories that I had about myself and about other people. It was beliefs that I had about how I was perceived in the world. Like a major one for me, I didn't really have any friends growing up. I was very, very shy. I was very, very introverted. And when you did get to know me, I was very, very sarcastic. Like even as a little kid, like as a 7-year-old, I was very, very sarcastic, and my humor wasn't, a lot of people didn't get it.
Yeah.
And so I didn't really have a lot of friends. And then when I became older, I started carrying that story with me that just nobody likes me and I'm not going to make any friends. And when I was 25, I think, I was able to recognize that for the first time. I was in a social situation with a bunch of people that I really, really admired. And the entire time I was this knot of anxiety that everybody hated me and I couldn't figure it out. And all of a sudden I realized that the reason that I didn't have any friends wasn't because people didn't like me. It was because I was assuming that they didn't like me and then immediately putting this huge shield up. Like, you don't like me, I need to protect myself from you. And I literally wasn't giving anybody the opportunity to even get to know me. So like,
you've got me for this. You've got me for this for a while. same exact thing for like a long time. So I'm just like, yep, fully agree here.
Yep. So that being an example of, I started being able to identify these common themes that had been present in my life, you know, for however long, either from early childhood or middle childhood or whenever. And as I became more and more aware of my own patterns of behavior and belief within a given situation, that opened up more and more choice for me in the next situation that would come up. And so through that practice of essentially re-experiencing my trauma and then evaluating it and evaluating myself and my own actions within those circumstances, I was able to essentially start to reprogram how I would behave in future situations. And this took a lot of time, and it was really, really grueling, and a lot of it sucked, and a lot of it really, really hurt. But it has taken me to a place to where at this point, like, my depression is virtually non-existent. My anxiety is acute and in very specific situations, and it gets better every time. And it's a never-ending process. Like, even just a couple weeks ago, I had an event that actually triggered a PTSD attack, which hasn't happened in months, but that was like another reminder to me, like, okay, the work isn't done. There's still more here for me to be navigating. There's still more here for me to be learning about myself. And then in addition to all of that, for a lot of years, I just gave myself a shitload of grace. Once I fully recognized the amount of trauma that I had undergone throughout my life, I spent a couple years literally just giving myself grace. If I wanted to do something, I just went and did it unapologetically. Just to allow myself the freedom of making choices that were uninhibited by what I thought other people should do, and using that as an act of healing for myself. Something I talk about a lot, not a lot anymore, but I did talk a lot about a year ago, was the importance of being sacredly selfish. And I really, really believe that everyone just needs to reach a point where you understand that you are pretty much all you have. And it is okay to be completely selfish with yourself and about what you want. I mean, provided that you are not actively causing harm to other people, like, do what you want to. If it brings you joy, do that. Like, don't compromise on what is important to you just to placate others. And that's a major problem that we see in like people pleasing, which is something that I did for a lot of years. Like, I had such a lack of self-love that I needed everybody else to love me and be proud of me. And so that meant I would literally just do whatever they wanted. Like, if you want it, I can make it happen, because I can do anything. I can do absolutely anything. So just tell me what you want. Tell me what will make you love me and will make you proud of me. And I'm going to do that. And unlearning that was difficult. And it all came from literally this thought of, I'm going to be sacredly selfish and fuck what other people think. I'm going to do what actually feels right, true, and real for myself and who I want to be in the future.
I feel like I just went through this. Like just learned this like the other day.
It's like, I'm pretty sure it's like an early to mid 20s thing that we kind of start discovering. It's like that actual coming into adulthood and who we are, you know, 25, your brain is finally fully developed.
I'm not fully developed yet. I'm still fucked up in the head. So that's what she's trying to say. Or she's trying to allude that I'm so fucked up. She just doesn't want to say it. She just wants
to
be nice.
You're so fucked up. Jeez, Beta.
But I mean, no, like what I went through like the other day, like dealing with things, I think it was the first time I really put myself first and like my career and what I wanted first. Because I think a lot of times, because I think that's why I had the anxiety attack.
Yeah.
Right. Is more so because it was a very uncomfortable situation where I put myself first and I wasn't used to it.
It's scary. It's scary when you start choosing you above somebody else, because at that point, the outcome completely rests on you. It's not on other people anymore. It's all about you. And that's terrifying. Like, we all say we want attention, but deep down inside, we kind of don't.
No, I'd rather not. I'd be good. I'm good. Nope. Mm-mm. I'm good. So, you know, yeah, because I think it's, and I think you really start to recognize it at 20, in your younger 20s, just because I think you could start to fully comprehend what things happened when you're through childhood.
Yep.
Because a lot of things, you know, as much as school and like you take psychology classes and things like that, and you really start to learn, like even taking just like a 101 psychology course, like you can really start to learn, hey, like the rewire, like workings of your brain and what actually happened like through your childhood. Yep. Like you can go through those things and actively like see what happened and when and why, and then you can actually figure it out. Yep. And I think that's a big I think that's a big thing. I think that's a big thing for people to actually go through, right? Because I think most people don't. I think the biggest part about it, right, is that you recognized it.
Yeah.
And it's not, and I think most people don't tend to want to recognize it because it does take that work. Because it does take that work. After you recognize it, then you realize, then like after you realize what happened, then it's so much work to unravel what actually like what you went through and work through.
So I think that's actually like, that's a major missing part though, is I think a lot of people are really good at recognizing their trauma, but then they get stuck in it and they develop that belief of like, well, I had all these traumas and that's why I'm like this.
Yeah.
And now this is just how I am, instead of recognizing like, okay, so you had all these traumas and yes, that is why you're like this now. And the missing step is, and you don't have to stay this way.
Yeah.
Like now that you have that awareness, you have choice potential. You have freedom to choose what the future is going to look like. And no, it's not going to be, I mean, for most people, it's not going to be as simple as like, okay, I'm going to be like this now. It's going to take some practice and some reps. But I really, based on everything that I see now, just in like social media and, you know, various people that I interact with, I think the major missing part isn't the recognition of what is going on. It's the understanding that that's not fixed. That's
not beautiful. Who you are. Yeah. You
change that. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like a symptom. It's like if someone has estrogen dominance and they lose their menstrual cycle, you don't just go, this is how I am now. Like, yes, this is how you are now and we can change it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's how I was when I went through, like, I didn't fully come to terms with my suicide attempt until I was 22 when I actually shared it out. And I think then when I came out with that, I just kept at it, but I felt free from it. Like afterwards, like after releasing it all and just like saying what happened, everything like that. But I felt for a while, you know, I was still like this person, like when you release something like that in the world or in the public, like people automatically be like, oh my God, he went through so much. Like it's such a strong story. And you kind of get attached to that still.
Yep.
And I think it was actually working through it, which is why now I'm like, oh, well, that was when I was 22. I was like, I went through that between that 22 to 23 age gap where, you know, I met a lot of these people that I'm friends with today. And it's why we even became friends, but it's not me now type thing.
Yep.
So leaning into that, kind of want to go into, because you talked about like estrogen dominance and things like that. And this is where it actually plays a part. I, at least anecdotally, what I see happens a lot. So I kind of want to bring this to like your clients, right? Like how you see people dealing with like past traumas really comes back to haunt them, like physically, emotionally, and even hormonally. Because I think we advise people to go to therapy.
Yeah.
Number one, there's a difference between just a coach and an actual therapist, and we can only do so much. So there's a big part where these past traumas, and I've talked about it with Austin too, and he's like, some people can't get past these. And they need to get this before they can actually even work with the coach.
Yep.
So if you want to go into kind of how you even see it in clients, or, you know, you've seen it like through yourself working with Mark or things like that, how it's come back to haunt some people, like actually these past traumas.
Yeah. So especially if it's like a significant trauma, I mean, the thing is, we like to, especially in Western medicine, we really like to separate the physical body from the mind and the emotion. And the fact of the matter is we are not separated like that. We're not a little machine that you can take apart piece by piece and then fix the one little piece and then put it all back together and it's just going to work. We are a completely integrated unit, and that includes body, mind, spirit, emotions, like whatever you want to put for the non-physical part that makes you. It's all fucking connected.
Yep.
And so a lot of times what I end up seeing, and I've seen this, I saw this in myself, I see this in my athletes, is when we leave these traumas unaddressed, you naturally have a higher state of stress. Especially if it's a significant trauma that is unaddressed, you're constantly in a sympathetically driven state. You're not letting go of it. You're holding on to all of those emotions. And on a physiological level, those emotions are affecting you. And we recognize this. We do a really good job of recognizing this in acute stress. So like if the car in front of you brake checks you and you have to slam on your brakes and you get emotional over that, like you feel that in your body, you feel that stress response, that huge surge of emotions, like that is very visceral. We understand that. We recognize that and we honor that. But when we start looking at long-term traumas, because the emotions are a little bit lower and they're prolonged over a longer period of time, we start looking at that as a natural or a normal state of being instead of recognizing that, I'm sorry, that is not normal at all. You are chronically stressed out. You're having cyclical thoughts. You're constantly anxious, or you're sad, or you straight up just, you're lethargic. You lay on your couch. You don't want to move. That is legitimately and 100% impacting your entire body. That's impacting your neuroendocrine function. That's impacting your rate of recovery. That's impacting the amount of power that you're able to put out when you're trained. That's fucking impacting your metabolic rate. I'm sorry. Like, if all systems are being impacted by this, it's literally changing the molecular state of your body. There's really cool research that was done. It was a while ago. I want to say it was like 10 or 15 years ago by this Japanese researcher. I can't remember what the name of the experiment was, but he took a bunch of droplets of water and put them all in different slides. And then with varying levels of emotion, he spoke different words to them. So like he'd go to one and he would say love, and he would go to the other and he would say anger. And he'd go to another and he'd say sadness, and he'd say grief. And like all of these different water droplets had different words and emotions spoken over them. And then he froze them to see what kind of like snowflake pattern they would make. And the water literally changed based on what he spoke over it. So like the one that was love was like this beautiful fucking snowflake. And the one that he spoke negative things over were legitimately ugly and discolored. And that's literally him like just speaking words over slides of water. That's it. And so with that kind of research, like this is like just a droplet in the pool. You have to understand that your emotional state, whether it's acute or chronic, is directly impacting how your body is responding to your environment. It's literally changing your genetic makeup at that point. So when it comes to these athletes that I start noticing are having these reoccurring issues, or they're coming to me and they're having these, you know, reoccurring issues with adherence with food, they're having, you know, disordered eating thoughts, or they're constantly stressed out, or they're constantly hating their body, or they're constantly wishing they were different. It is a very large indicator to me that until they correct their thought process, no matter what tools we apply in the body, they're probably not going to progress. And I hate that. I hate it so much because I could literally write them the most perfect plan in the world.
It won't do nothing.
And it won't do anything for them, even if they execute it perfectly.
Yep.
Even if they execute it perfectly, because their mind is where their mind is, and because they are chronically experiencing these low vibration or negative emotions, it's not going to work.
I tell people you need to, like, if you've held expressions in about how you feel or anything like to family members or anything like that, like it's going to come back to bite you in the butt. Like, especially like big things. Like looking at studies, like you even see that like IBS and those things are partially like neurological. Like,
oh no, they're literally classified. So it's like, IBS, IBD like, are classified as neurological.
Because literally your gut is tied to your brain. So, so if there is something wrong with your gut, it's most likely something's wrong here that can transfer down into your gut, which is why I actually see that a lot of gut issues are more so not just from like stress related or like food related things. It's more so something that's been brought up in the past. Like I have a client right now who's dealt with like constipation her whole life, right? But she also dealt with like her brother's calling her fat and things. Yeah. And so there's like there's a big component to those two things there in relation to how food's going to move through, why she's constipated. Like, those things go all the way back there. And I'm like, some of these things can't be solved. Like, you're right. Like, you really are right. Like, I've had multiple discussions with other coaches where we're like, why isn't this plan working? And usually the first thought, and this is where some of my friends are really good, because Dylan and Taylor are both very much psychological beings and they like to get into that stuff. And they're like, what's the person's mind like? Like, they dive into that and how, like, the person answers, how the person acts, how even the person, and you can kind of tell this, I tell this by check-ins.
Yeah.
So if I see someone who writes a good amount of information on their check-ins, like a good amount, I often think that there's something in their thought process that's really, really, that's disconnecting there.
Yep.
And that needs to be worked on. Like, that's at least like the telltale sign where I see it.
I'm like, you're hyperanalyzing things. You're a little stress basket. Like, if you're giving me more than one sentence or like five words on a biofeedback note for like no reason, something's going on here.
Yeah, unless I specifically ask for that, I'm like, don't do that.
Yeah.
I'm like, write how you're feeling. That's why I use numbers. I feel like numbers are also a very poor indicator, but
Dude, I don't like using numbers because like it's so it doesn't actually tell me what I need to know.
No, because then you find out that the number's not really the number.
Exactly. Or they're doing it backwards.
Yeah. So I think you brought up a great point about just overall stress. And I think this is something that, you know, you have an ebook, so I'll just plug it for you that you have an ebook.
Thank you. All about stress.
But I think this is a key that I want to get over here, because this is also part of the past traumas. Past trauma is a stressor. And yes, a lot of people don't want to admit it, whether they want to or not. These things are stressors.
They don't want to deal with it.
Like, even
so they're alone.
Or anything that's going on in your life that's causing anxiety, that's a stressor. So I kind of want you to go into, like, because you definitely had to find it within yourself, right? Over how you were truly stressed. Like, you can't just write a book about stress and not have gone through it yourself. So how you realized that you were like truly stressed and how it was affecting you. Whether that is through, you know, through the past traumas or anything, which, I mean, it most likely was through it for a lot of it. But how do you realize like you were truly stressed? And then we'll go deeper into that after that.
So there are a couple points in time that I have had to like step back and be like, oh, okay, I'm really stressed right now. my most recent one was actually about a month ago. And I was like, oh, I'm really, okay, I need to change the thing. before that, it was, I guess about a year ago was my other one. I was like, oh, I'm really stressed right now. And then before that, it was a couple years. But so at this point, like speaking currently, like if we're talking about my most recent one, my biofeedback was undesirable. I knew what was normal for me and I knew what I was seeing and the two were not matching up. Yep. And for a while I just blamed it on everything else I possibly could. It's not stress, it's this other thing, or maybe it's this other thing. And finally I got to a point where my biggest tip off for myself is monitoring my thoughts. Where are my thoughts going every day? What am I thinking about? Am I thinking the same thought like 30, 50, 100 times a day that's not like a positive growth-oriented thought? Like, am I literally just cycling these same problems around and around in my head and finding myself annoyed about the same thing over and over again? What I'll also notice is like when I get stressed out, I will have cyclical past-oriented thoughts where I will pull up a conversation and I'll relive it over and over and over again. I'll play it out in my head over and over and over and over again and literally like be re-experiencing the negative emotions of that. My biggest downfall when I am stressed is I will literally create more stress for myself. And honestly, most people do this. Most people are literally their own biggest stressor. Because they don't monitor their thoughts. They don't redirect their thoughts. They don't take control of their mind space. So for me, that was a really big indicator. My biofeedback was another, it was a confirming factor in that. And then lastly, I really just got to a point where I realized I was like, I'm not happy. Like, and I've been happy for a few years. Like I had deep chronic depression and generalized anxiety for like a decade. But when I got out of those, like for the most part, like, I'm a happy person. I walk around, I live my life, like, I'm happy. I'm happy to play with my dog. I'm happy to talk to my friends. When I get stressed out, I don't want to do any of that. I literally don't. I want to sit on my couch and I want to think about how terrible my life is. In all reality, my life is fucking awesome. But when I'm stressed out, I completely forget that. And I only fixate on those negative experiences that frustrate me. And I just cycle them around and around in my head. So when I'm working with clients, if I suspect that there's any kind of a stress issue, if we start getting weird biofeedback, if they're not progressing the way that I want them to, one of the first things I will have them do is I will tell them, I was like, either start a note section in your phone or buy a small notebook. And I want you to literally start tracking your thoughts. What are you thinking about? Write it down. How many of the same thoughts are you having every single day? And what are those thoughts? And generally, they're having the same thoughts fucking day, and they're negative as fuck.
Yeah.
I'm like, cool. Now we have something to work with. Now I can start telling you, okay, when you start having that thought, here's what we're going to redirect it to. Or here, that's that thought. As soon as you become aware that you're having it, this is going to be your trigger to go do this. And we start putting in basically classical conditioning for them to start getting out of that cyclical thought loop. And that helps a lot, actually. That's usually my first step. And then from there, no, sorry, I don't need you. Siri is like, I will help you. But then from there, you know, we'll dive into if they're having like general life stress because they just have too much on their plate. They're doing too many things. We'll start going through and being like, okay, what can we cut? Something that I've noticed in a lot of people, and I actually noticed this in myself too. And as soon as I did, I was like, oh, and we're pulling back, is when you get really stressed out and you get unhappy, your performance in a lot of areas starts to decline. And then that just kind of furthers your discouragement because then you're thinking about all the things that you failed at. And then since it's like a limited number of things, and especially in the bodybuilding world, you think about how demanding and how selfish of a sport bodybuilding is. Like, we work, we train, we eat, we sleep. Like, that's bodybuilding life. People start thinking, oh, well, I'm unhappy because this is all I do in my life, which is why I suck at it. So I need to add more things. I need a hobby. I need another animal.
Maybe no, I should have a no. kid.
I'm going to pick up, you know, rock climbing, and I'm going to start backpacking. And I'm going to, like, we just want to add all these things because society tells us that happiness is in balance. And if you want balance, you need to have more things on your plate. There needs to be, you know, 5 different kinds of vegetables at every meal. And that's not the case. You're unhappy and you're feeling that discouragement because you're not excelling at the things that are important to you, because you're spending all of your time caught up in all of your past failures instead of premeditating your success for the day that's in front of you. So what I tell a lot of people to do as well is do less stuff. I'm sorry, but you don't actually need to be adding in these hobbies. You definitely don't need another dog right now. You suck at what you're doing. So why don't you get really, really good at what you're doing? And I guarantee you, you're gonna feel happier about your life.
Yeah.
And when you're excellent at all of the things that you're doing, and you find that you might have free time and free space that you don't want to use, you know, reading or taking a bath or, you know, talking to your family, then okay, let's look at something else we can add in. But until that point, adding more things in that you're going to be really shitty at is only going to make you feel worse.
Yeah. Yeah. I go through the same thing. So when I get really stressed, I'll go like dark mode for a little while, and people be like, you've been more silent as of late. And I'm like, I'm just working. And I'm like, working on myself. I'm like, that's, and they're like, you've been that busy. I'm like, no, I'm working on myself. I was like, actually, it's really funny because I released the episode today with Jamie Filer, and we were talking about it, and we were talking about our anxiety, right, and how we deal with it. And actually, the way I dealt with it the other day is I just sent a few messages over to friends.
Yeah.
And was like, hey, this is what's happening. This is what's going on. I'm having a major anxiety attack. I just need to get this off my chest. Like, just, you don't need to respond or anything. And I think that has been a great strategy. But I find that everyone tries to do the classic strategies of like meditation and things like that, but people don't know how to properly meditate. Like, they'll sit there for 5 minutes, but they won't know how to properly meditate.
Yeah. They don't know how to.
I tell people to literally download, like, I'm like, you have to download like I tell people spend the money on the Wake Me Up app or the Wake Up app by Sam Harris. I'm like, because his voice is like that good at guiding through it. I'm like, you can't just like, I find with coaches, like they want to be like, okay, what's your stress reduction tactics? Journaling, meditating, going for a walk, like doing all these things. And it's more so, it's not the act of doing it, right? It's the act of being present within it.
Yep.
That I think is the key out of everything. It's more so a lot of people just journal and they're just journaling. Like you've probably have seen it because you ask people to journal and it doesn't do jack shit for some clients where it's like, they're not actually present while journaling. They're just journaling to say they check the box off. Right. Or they're like, oh, I took a bath, check the box off. Or, oh, I did nothing, check the box off. Whereas they're thinking about checking the box off, which is the whole purpose of not doing what you're supposed to be doing. So you're not supposed to be thinking about checking the box off. So I find that it's actually getting people to become more present really allows them to understand what is stress, because you're going to realize it when you're able to remain present. Mm-hmm. You're going to realize, you're going to feel your heart rate. You're going to feel how fast you're breathing. You're going to feel like you're going to feel that sense of energy come about you. Like if you're stressed, or you're going to feel that energy of like anxiety come about you. Like if you're able to remain present, like you'll know if something's disturbing you. Yes. I think that's where people go wrong. Right. People always ask me at my full-time job, they're like, you don't seem stressed. And I'm like, no, I'm just really good at understanding when I am and actually starting to breathe through it. Like I was like, a lot of people don't see me on camera. They're like, you don't seem to worry about a lot of these things that freak us out. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, cause I know one, we're going to figure it out. And number two, I understand that when I am stressed and I try to avoid that. Yep. So I'll start breathing. Like if I feel stressed, I'll start breathing or something. Yep. So I think that's the best thing. Yeah.
A tactic that I use a lot is cause what made me think of this is you're like, you don't seem stressed about the things that really worry us. And this can be a little bit of a sketchy one, so I don't apply it in a lot of clients, but I do in several, is when you're in those moments of acute stress and you're like, oh my God, something terrible is going to happen. What if this happens? What if this happens? You know, the little what if maker that thinks of all the worst case scenario things and then go about them. What I have people do is I'm like, okay, what is the absolute worst case thing that could happen? Like, seriously, let it rip. Like, give me your top five worst scenarios here and they'll list them out and be like, okay, cool. That could happen. You are absolutely right. It is a possibility. So if that does happen, then what would our next step be? You're still alive. You still have a body. You still have a community. What are we going to do? Let's figure out a plan. What would we do if the worst thing happened? Okay, well, I'd probably do this. Cool. What would you do after that? And literally start making, like, for all of the negative what if scenarios that you have, make a positive what if solution. Like, just literally just check that box off. You're already thinking of the worst. Okay, so the worst absolutely could happen. And you're still going to be alive. You're still going to be here. You're still going to be kicking. So what are you going to do? It's not like you're just going to all of a sudden lay down, give up on your floor and just lay there until you die. That's not going to happen. You're going to take actions. You're going to be okay. So make a plan to literally combat that negative what if scenario and get you out of that loop of just absolute stress. Move it into something productive. The energy and the emotion is there. And because you aren't directing it, it's automatically going to the negative. But you do have the choice to harness that and redirect it to the positive. And as soon as you do, it gets better. Something that a mentor told me once about meditation specifically was that a lot of people have the misunderstanding of meditation that when you go to meditate, your brain will be completely clear and empty and nothing will happen. That's not true. You're going to have thoughts. And a lot of people get really frustrated because they go to meditate and they're looking for that Zen quiet place and they keep having all these thoughts. And then they keep thinking about the fact that they're having all these thoughts and they're failing at meditation. My mentor told me too, when you are meditating, think about your thoughts like you're sitting at the edge of a highway and your thought is a car that's going by you. Oh, I see it coming. It's coming. Oh, and it passed me and it's gone. And I can't see it anymore. And it's gone. And now the highway is empty. And you have these little moments, these gaps between cars. And those moments are what we're trying to get to. And over time, those little gaps between cars are going to get larger and larger. They'll be longer and longer. There's going to be more stillness. But the cars are still going to come by. What matters is that you don't, like, run to the car and try and jump on it and stop it in the middle of the highway. That's never going to happen. You're just going to go with the car. It's going to take you, and you're not going to be in meditation anymore.
Yeah.
You just have to let them by and let them go and practice that non-attachment to what's going on in your brain. And when you can get to a place of being non-attached to the thoughts that you're having, then you have the option of actually changing them and directing them.
I call it respond versus react. I've gone over this a million times on my podcast, so I'm not going to go over on this one, but it's basically learn to respond, not react to a certain thing. Once you're able to learn to respond, then your whole mindset will shift.
Yep.
So I'm going to close this off with a pretty cool thing. You did get a new piece.
I did get a hand.
People won't be able to see this, but you know, you can go to your profile. You can see it. She posted it up.
I did.
What did you get and why?
I got the lower half of a human skull on the back of my hand. So when I put my hand up to my face, the lower half of my face is the lower half of the skull. I've wanted this tattoo for 5 years. I wanted it because I saw this really, I had a major girl crush on her at the time. Hot CrossFitter chick, had one that was very different from this. It was a lot more like feminine and light, and mine's all dark and ugly. And I saw it and I liked it. I thought it was cool and I wanted it. And then I was terrified of getting it. And this last year, so every year on my birthday, I have a little ritual that I do with myself. I do something that I have never done before, and I do something that scares me. and that's my birthday present to myself every year. So like the first year that I did this, I went bungee jumping. The second year I went cliff diving. The third year I quit my job and I started being an online coach. The fourth year I moved across the country. And this year I decided to get this tattoo for myself because it really scared me, because like it's on my hand. Obviously tattoos are forever. This is not my first tattoo. But it was something that for whatever reason, like I always had like this little bit of like about it, just kind of made me feel.
I would never get a hand tattoo. Like, not gonna lie, I would never get a hand tattoo.
I've gone back and forth on it for years about whether or not I'd get a hand tattoo. And I finally told myself 2 years ago that if I consistently wanted a hand and or finger tattoos for a whole year, then I would get them. And I hit that whole year and I was like, fuck it, I got to do it. So I found the artist that I wanted to go to. And then I was on a 7-month waiting list and I finally got in and I got the tattoo and it was awesome. And so like at that, it didn't really mean much when I got it and when I planned on getting it, aside from meeting my birthday requirements of doing something that scares me a little bit and something I've never done before. But it was actually kind of funny because I was in the car, I was driving home yesterday. And I looked down at my hand and I kind of had this thought. I was like, wow, this is really ugly. And the piece itself is beautiful. He did incredible fucking work. It is a beautiful tattoo, but like, it's kind of ugly. And I kind of stumbled on that for a minute and then realized that that's actually kind of why I have loved it this whole time, is because it's ugly. And that's why I've wanted it this whole time, is because it's ugly. And I'll be completely real. I'm going to need to sit with this and think about it for a little bit longer and figure out like what that actually means. But my theory right now is I grew up my entire life, really up until the last couple years, just like completely believing that I was ugly. I have two older sisters who are gorgeous. They're beautiful. And when I was a kid, I was chubby. I was fat and I had glasses and like I was not beautiful. And so in a lot of ways, like it just kind of feels weirdly cathartic to choose to put something that is ugly on my body because I can see so much beauty in it, because it is a beautiful piece of work. And a lot of people aren't gonna get it, and that's okay. I'm sure my parents are like, oh my God, what have you done? But it's just like in life, in our culture, especially, we're so obsessed with everything being beautiful and everything being perfect and like cultivating your aesthetic. And I've always struggled with that. That's never really been me. And so in a lot of ways, like, I don't know, it was a cool moment looking down at my hand yesterday in the car and just immediately being like, damn, this is really ugly. and I really love it for that. So
nice. Awesome. Well, I mean, I'm hopefully getting my second one done. Fortunately, it won't be a hand tattoo.
Oh, man. I don't think you're allowed to because your job.
I think I get fired pretty quickly. Yeah. I think a forearm's close enough. And there's nowhere else I want to get it because I want to get my arm done, but I bodybuild. Yeah. So I'm not getting my arm done. That's not happening. Not after bodybuilding. This whole arm will be done after bodybuilding. Maybe besides like this part because I'm probably going to be a bitch to get those things done.
Yeah, I heard that's a little painful. But then everyone told me my hand was going to hurt like hell too, and it really wasn't that bad.
You must have the pain tolerance of the most spectacular thing in the world because that sounds like it's going to hurt.
I said that in stories this morning. Someone asked me a question about it, and I was like, yeah, take everything I say with a grain of salt because I am a chronic pain person, so I'm pretty sure my pain tolerance is just a little fucked up.
So before we leave, final 2-3 questions here. What do you want everyone to leave with? Three things.
Three things I want everyone to leave with. Number one, you matter, keep going. Number two, I promise you, you are way more stressed out than you think you are. Number three, you're not alone. There is hope. You just need to decide that you want it more than your misery.
Awesome. Number two, three books and or podcasts you recommend everybody either read or listen to.
Oh, three books I recommend everyone read. Okay, so this one I actually just finished at the beginning of this year. Relentless by Tim Grover was absolutely exceptional.
Is this on Mark's book list?
Yeah.
Have you guys read this?
He had us read it and then I read it super fast. They're all still reading it. So I'm just like reading other books now. But no, Relentless, Relentless was excellent. His book that he put out after that, Winning by Tim Grover, was also really good, but that's not going to be on my recommendation list. Relentless by Tim Grover is number one. The Gift of Fear by Gavin DeBecker. Everybody needs to read that. Like literally everybody needs to read that book. And then the third one I would have to say is...
You could do a podcast too if you really want to, but I know you're not listening to podcasts, so...
I'm not really listening to podcasts right now. I mean, there are a lot of good podcasts out there. I really enjoy the Excellence Cartel. That's a good one. They always have great guest speakers on.
I was on there. So yeah, I approve.
You know what? I will plug a podcast just because I feel like it's my duty as a Tominic trained coach. And that's going to be the Competitive Edge.
No, don't listen to them. I'm kidding. I'm not affiliated with anybody anymore. So I could plug what I want. That works.
You're like, no, fuck that guy.
lastly, where can people find you? Anything you want to shout out? Anything you want to say? Your time, your however many seconds it takes, your 15-second shame time plug.
My tag is @_Leah, LEYAH. I'm on Facebook, but I'm rarely active. And otherwise, you can check out my website at TominicTrain.com. Check out Tominic Train because we're a bunch of dope ass people doing really, really cool shit in the bodybuilding world. But yeah, Instagram is where you can hit me up. You can also find my ebook there. And I think that's about it.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate you guys. I appreciate you coming on the show. Number one, it took us only 45 minutes to start recording and then we finally recorded it. Which is classic us because we will get into a conversation for like an hour and not do anything with it.
Great time though.
And then, so if you guys enjoyed listening to this episode, as always, subscribe to the podcast, share it with a friend, share it on your Instagram story, tag Leah and I that you're listening. Leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple. Use code SPADA at morphogennutrition.com for 10% off all supplements per usual. And yeah, we'll see what guests I get on the next episode. I'm just trying to level up here. Maybe one day we'll get Mark back on here.
Do a double feature.
Our whole journey together so far, because I think it would be quite an episode. So we'll see awesome. About getting some more Tominic train coaches on here. But other than that, guys, thank you guys for listening to this episode of the Ace of Spada podcast.